It was a room in New York City, a quiet room with a long mahogany table. There were ashtrays, pitchers with water glasses, and men and women. Editors, lawyers, professors, poets, presidents of corporations. 41 men and women who sat around the table and talked for 7 days. And I sat in a corner and listened.
Whatever we have been able to achieve has been the result of the inherent harmony of the inheritance which we have received from other cultures.
If I had to sum up in one phrase the meaning of American society, I would say...
The men who drafted the American Constitution did not assume the infinite perfectibility of man. Our whole concern about the dispersion of controls, about checks and balances, was based on a profound distrust of any man who acquired too much power. The entire...
They were there to find an answer to a question, a rather important question that is being asked now around the world. What is America?
This is Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. On the eve of another Thanksgiving, that uniquely American holiday, we bring you a special program suggested by the Advertising Council's recent roundtable discussion by distinguished Americans, and the title of which is suggested by Arthur Goodfriend's book, which came out of that roundtable. An appropriate question to raise at Thanksgiving time. What is America?
It was called the American Round Table, although the table was oblong, and the men and women were experts, distinguished specialists in American art, business, communications, education, letters, religion, and science. I was there because I was an expert. I sat in the corner and listened and took down what was said word for word as fast as vowels and consonants were formed by distinguished larynxes, bounced off revered hard palates, and clipped by academically honored front teeth. When you take verbatim notes, there's an odd paradox. Every word that's said goes through your ear, to the mind, to the fingertips, to the paper, and yet little of it remains with you. The 7 days were over. In my briefcase, I carried the day's notes, and on my desk, the typed pages were piled high. I'd listened to every word, and as I walked through the streets of the city, I thought of the question these men and women had met to answer. What is America? What are Americans? What do they think? What do they feel? What do they like? And why? It was an autumn day. The vegetable store I passed had squash and pumpkins in the window. The butcher shop had turkeys hanging from the hooks, fresh killed, 56 cents a pound. I'd walked for many blocks, carrying in my hand the chicken tracks, the squiggles and hooks that were the words of the experts. Somewhere in the stacks of typed pages, they said, would be the answer to the question. But somehow there must be a simpler answer. My father used to say the more important a question is, the simpler is the answer. If an ordinary man cannot see the truth, what good is it? And what more important question was there than this? What is America? I changed the briefcase from my right hand to my left. I'd been carrying it for a long time. I stopped and I looked around. I knew now why I thought of my father. It was the old neighborhood. A block from where I stood, I'd been born. There across the street was the school I went to. The same building, the same chalk scrawls on the sidewalk, the same complicated diagrams that city children use to play 100 games with balls and bottle caps and sawed-off broomsticks. I walked around the corner and stood before the house where I'd been born. It was empty now, a shell. To the right and to the left of it, the tenements had collapsed into a pile of rubble. A bathtub upside down capped the heap. An old pail, a pair of useless broken shoes, and tin cans. Hundreds of tin cans. There was a wooden shanty, half on the sidewalk, half on the lot, and the poster stated proudly that on this spot a housing project was going up, named for a city councilman who had lived just across the way over above the fish market. I counted up 5 floors. The window there behind the fire escape was empty, a jagged edge of glass around the frame. The house looked old, battered, as if age and rot itself might have collapsed the walls inward before the wrecker's power shovel could do the job. Yet here before this house, I remembered the first part of the answer. It was my father's first roof in America. I remember how he told me.
We landed at the Battery. There was no Ellis Island then. That was after. You read in the newspapers the stories of people from the old country getting their first sight of the Statue of Liberty. Where I was, in steerage, if you told the man you wanted to go up on the deck, he laughed. But I'll tell you, I didn't have to see the Statue of Liberty. Down in the hold of the ship, with my head pounding from the engines and seasick, so I thought I would die, and hungry and cold with a calf, a very bad calf, I knew. I turned to your mother and I said, "We are in America." And you know what she said? "As long as the boat stops rocking, I'll be happy." But she didn't mean it. Now you, boy. You with your baseball players and your chewing gum and movies. You don't know what it is to be seasick in steerage and to know in your heart that out there, above you, because you are under the waterline, above you, with a light shining, is liberty.
So this is part of the answer. Americans, except for a handful who were here, arrived. All of them at some time, at some port, arrived.
Our vessel sailing before good winds, which God in his providence saw fit to bestow upon us, did drop anchor off the coast of the New World upon a Tuesday. And after offering prayers of thanksgiving to Almighty God, the governor did order a boat to be put over the side, and at last we set foot upon this new land. We found it to be a well-watered bay, bountiful of fish, game, and berries, for which we, at the earliest opportunity, again gave thanks.
Americans arrived from the east, from the south, through Mexico. And in the years that followed, this single fact remained constant where all else differed. Still, from somewhere, Americans arrived.
I heard the story from my grandma. I'm 96, but I remember it like I just heard it. She come on the last ship. The law was passed before, but they paid no heed. Chained, she told me. Chained in the space so's you couldn't stand up nor rightly lie down, neither. Hundreds of them. Men and women, like babies, chained in the hold of that slave ship. Not knowing where they was being took nor why. But miserable and hungry and dying like flies from the sickness and the smell. She come on the last of the ships, my grandma, and she told me.
In the whole of the country from north to south and from east to west, there was ne'er a man, woman, or child that didn't live one St. Martin's Day clear around to another on just one thing. Sure, what was it? The potato. It was meat and drink both. Then for 3 years, hand running the crop failed. There wasn't a job at wages in Ulster in the north of the very ocean that surrounds us. So what was a man to do? It was either starve to death or emigrate. Well, some did one and some did the other. And where to go but America?
Into village I come from, there was no land to farm. A man could live his lifetime and never hear of a field that was for sale. But in America, there was land for farmer, land for man who was willing to work. In America was the West.
From 1600 on, wave after wave arrived. The English, the German, the Irish, the Slavs, the Italians, the Chinese, and the Caribbean Islanders. In America, the oldest family was one that had arrived a mere 100 years before the next one. This was part of the answer. Here on this street, I saw so many of them. When I was young, they called it the melting pot. But they were wrong. And you can find out why by looking almost anywhere. For example, windows of restaurants. I walked through the streets of my old neighborhood and read the menus in the windows of the small restaurants. Sauerbraten, ravioli, smörgåsbord, Boston baked beans, Dutch apple pie, pot cheese, blintzes, bamboo sprouts, tamales, and canned tomato soup. Americans arrived and brought with them something of the past. A recipe, a costume, a joke, a song, a religion, and a way of thinking. They didn't lose them. They didn't throw away the past as the boat dropped anchor, and yet they borrowed each from the other. A housewife in Columbus, Georgia, buys a sack of flour, and folded up inside is a sheet of paper printed with recipes. The sack of flour goes quickly for plain cake, thick milk gravy, and biscuits. But perhaps the last cup may be used for Danish coffee ring, or rolled out into a cartwheel shape for pizza. Americans didn't melt, not really. They swapped. They traded food and songs and stories until each family, whether native for 8 generations or just off the boat, was richer. I passed a brick wall, the last wall standing in one of the homes that was being leveled. The posters were still there from a month or two ago, but the rain and small boys had attacked them violently. The posters said, "Vote for, elect, your man is." The names were gone, but the message was there. I remembered so many years ago in the kitchen of my house, my mother hovering in the steam of her giant pot of soup, my father coming in the door.
Well, close the door, Papa. Do you want the neighbors to know everything that goes on?
In this house, the walls are so thin, if you change your mind, the janitor in the basement can hear it turning over.
Mm. So, wash up for supper.
Don't you want to hear my news?
So?
Today I registered.
Oh, wash up for supper.
Oh, didn't you hear me? I registered.
Well, what should I do, Papa? Shout already? Somebody's always registering for taxes, for the army.
Oh, that's in the old country. I register to vote. This is the first year since I have the citizen's papers. This year I vote.
Does that mean you should sit down to supper without washing? Go, Papa.
Oh, don't you realize how important that is? I'm going to vote.
So what can you vote for? You yourself told me that in this district the politicians on both sides are bums. So go vote.
Now, that is not the point. Today, this year, they are bums. But now I have to vote, and someday we'll throw out all the bums. The important thing is the vote. Remember, in the old country, we had the bums and no vote. From a vote comes improvement.
Hmm. Well, don't stand on one leg till improvement comes along. Now, wash up for supper, Papa.
But my father was right. From the vote does come improvement. It always has. Slowly, perhaps. But in the long run, where a man has a vote, he has in his hands his own destiny. I remember election day when I was little. For weeks, we haunted the storekeepers asking for empty boxes. Mr. Cavanaugh, who had the store on the corner, he used to see us come to ask for empty boxes, and he'd laugh and laugh. Mr. Cavanaugh was the undertaker. And why the collection? Because election night was for bonfires. High, leaping fires in the streets, with the policemen who usually chased us standing smiling while we shouted hurrah and hooray for whoever happened to win. We didn't care then. But that celebration was important. On our street, it was a memorial to the ballot box, a celebration of a right that few men who lived in our ward would have had in the lands from which they'd come, the right to vote. And from the vote did come improvement. My father and his neighbors elected a city councilman who became a congressman and a governor. When he rode up Broadway in a great parade one day, my father came home, brushed the confetti out of his cuffs, and told my mother, "I did that with my vote." I walked past the school. I remembered it as an old, crumbling building, dirty and cheerless. And now, as I stood before it, I realized that memory can often play tricks, but in this case, it was accurate to a painful degree. In the windows on the ground floor, the kindergarten children had pasted colored paper animals and flowers. The school looked like an old, crumbling woman who has put on bright-colored earrings to try to appear youthful. I remember being taken to that school one day by my father, leading me firmly by the ear and lecturing me in a loud voice as we went. I died a thousand deaths of humiliation and shame.
10 hours a day. 10 hours a day I spent rolling cigars. Why do I do it? Is it because I like cigars? Because a cigar is a thing of beauty? No. I do it to pay the rent and buy food and clothes so that you can go to school and grow up and smoke the cigars. So what happens? You play hooky. Who are you cheating? Who are you fooling? Staying away from school? Me, the teacher? She's lucky not to have you in the class. You are cheating yourself. When I was your age, I wanted to go to school. I asked my father, and you know what he answered? A slap in the face. School is for the rich. But here, my son, you can go to school every day. And so what do? You run away to see cowboys? To sit on the bench in a Nickelodeon and see cowboys? Here's a school. Go inside. Stay inside. Learn. Cowboys.
To my father, that crumbling mausoleum of a school was a beautiful temple of learning. Those grime-stained doors were a gateway to opportunity. Of course, I was impatient. In the paperback books by Horatio Alger that I read, a boy of 8 should be firmly planted on the road to financial success. I couldn't understand why it was necessary to spend long hours on hard school benches, while in the streets, 1,000 newsboys were already on the road from rags to riches. It was a road we believed in, all of us. And although reality soon took the gloss off the wildest of the dreams, still the belief shaped Americans. Man thought that opportunity was unlimited, and for some of them, the thinking made it so. There's a poem that says, "America was promises." That's less than half the truth. I walked down along the sidewalk and remembered a day when a crowd of children gathered because there on the street was a pile of furniture. A bed, old mattresses, a bureau, a clock. And sitting in a rocker beside the ash cans, somebody's grandmother, crying and rocking. When times were bad, and the shops laid off men, evictions were common in our neighborhood. The furniture on the sidewalk was a nightmare that haunted many families. In other places, the nightmare took a different shape. The foreclosed mortgage on the farm. The stack at the mine shaft without its plume of smoke. The huge gate of a mill closed tight. America was hard times, too.
There was a sign up in the grocery store today, Papa. No more credit.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you want me to do?
Nothing. I just mentioned it.
I try to get work. Up to 48th Street and 10th Avenue, I walk to save the subway fare.
Yeah.
There are 15 jobs and 400 men.
What are we going to do?
I'll look again tomorrow.
Why should this happen, Papa? You are a good workman.
Sure, I'm a good workman. Long, thin cigars.
all Havana fillers and wrappers. Banker specials, they call them. Well, in hard times, there aren't so many bankers left to smoke specials.
Couldn't you get a job making 2 for a nickel?
I tried, Mom, I tried. It's not only cigars, it's dresses and shoes and everything.
The Hoffmans were evicted.
Oh, a brewmaster. Mm. Mm. Times are bad when men can't buy beer.
5 little children. You should have seen them, Papa, playing King of the Hill on the furniture piled up on the sidewalk. Oh, shame.
Hmm.
No place even to sleep.
Ah.
And such cold weather.
Hmm. How many did you take in, Mom?
Just 3, Papa. They are sleeping inside in our bed, crossways.
Oh, crossways. And where do we sleep?
Would you want little children out all night on the sidewalk?
No, Mother, no.
You want some supper now, maybe? There soon.
Ah, later, later. I look at the paper, maybe somewhere they want an experienced cigar maker. Even cigarettes.
The happy things are easy. A boat where there was none before, freedom where there was slavery, education where there was ignorance, and a promise where there was hopelessness. But the testing of America was the hard times. And part of America was a dust bowl and a 3-day week in the factory and the lines at the soup kitchen. To face a frontier is an old American habit, whether it was the dark and bloody ground of Kentucky or the frontier of hard times.
So we are going west.
West?
Well, why not?
You mean leave here?
What good does it do to stay? To be out of work is no disgrace. Not to do something about it is.
But, Papa, we have always lived on this block.
Are we bound to the land like in the old country? We have a continent to choose from. We are going west.
And so we moved west to Paterson, New Jersey. Even though the distance was a few miles across the Hudson River, the direction was significant. Americans have always moved west. Hard times pushed the Massachusetts Bay Colony into the Berkshire Hills. They pressed the settlers into the Louisiana Purchase Territory, into the plains, to California. And now, when the geographic west is reached and there is no frontier further on the map, America produces a spiritual west. A frontier that spreads across the country into new industries, new concepts so vast that only America as a whole can undertake them. Dams flung across whole river valleys, areas as big as half a kingdom of the old world brought back from desert to fertility. Hard times were a test of America and spurred us to the highest achievements. I walked across the street to the park I remember as a child. The park was a triangle between 2 avenues, not big enough for 2 baseball games to exist simultaneously without the outfielders interlocking. In the summer evenings, I remember the knots of men and women talking and listening. For this park that had no blade of grass and 1 tree was our Hyde Park, our Roman Forum, our safety valve and our conscience. Here our neighborhood spoke its mind. Here the most sacred things we knew were examined, analyzed, criticized, and even attacked. Religion, business, government, labor, women's rights, education, everything. Here in the park, it was always open season on ideas. Tempers flared. There were shouts, names called, even fights. And still, this park was important, for here there was criticism. An evil which is criticized is on its way to being mended. There's no institution in America so sacrosanct that the people may not find it wanting and correct its faults. And without this park, without the right to complain, to criticize and correct, we stagnate. I walked back through the street where my house stood. I looked across several blocks already leveled, and there I saw the steel and concrete rising in a new shape. Where tenements had stood, a skeleton of a new house grows. things can get better. I think that that's a large part of the answer. Things can get better because we want them to. And now I turned home, carrying with me the briefcase with the words of the experts, 41 wise men and women who talked for 7 days to answer the question, what is America? I'd taken down every word. I'd heard it all. And now one last phrase of one of them came back to me. Defying the pattern makers, our republic is the hardest democracy in the world to get inside a book. There's no answer that even experts can set down hard and fast on paper in 7 days. America is America. It's a history, a philosophy, a religion, an inheritance that changes daily and yet remains the same. It's a total of Americans dead and living. There's no use in looking for an answer that can be pinned to a board like a butterfly. America is what we will make it for our children and what they will make it for theirs. The question that was asked can be answered in many ways. You can sit as I did at a long table with 50 wise men and take down their words. Or you can walk around your own block, across your own land, down the main street of your own town, and find the answer. The afternoon was gone. The air grew cold. I pulled my coat around me and took the subway home.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from the National Vice Commander of the Legion, Mr. Patrick Mangan. Mr. Mangan.
Today, more than 1 million Americans are serving in our armed forces overseas, and over 2 million are in training in military bases throughout the United States. The American Legion supports the efforts of the USO's mail call in bringing a bit of home to these servicemen and women wherever they may be stationed. The Legion's nearly 3 million veterans well remember the lift that a letter from home provided in their daily lives as servicemen. Past experience has shown that morale of military personnel is particularly low in post-war periods. Since the signing of the truce in Korea, a letter to a serviceman is even more vital in lending personal meaning to his service for his country and a reassurance that he is remembered by the folks at home. The Legion's own unique project, Hometown USA, a nationwide program to send tape-recorded messages from friends and loved ones at home to servicemen overseas, has proven to be a splendid morale-building program. Those in the Legion that have worked directly with servicing requests for these taped personal messages, as well as Hometown USA tune requests, have been moved by the countless letters of enthusiastic response which have poured in from grateful GIs. USO Mail Call, Hometown USA, and other Hands Across the Seas programs should receive our full cooperation and support. Let's keep in contact with our armed forces, that those who are stationed in the far places of the earth may know we at home recognize their service to America, that we appreciate their contribution to the preservation of our inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Mangan. Next week, Inheritance will again take you on a journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by Ernest Canoy and was suggested by Arthur Goodfriend's book, What is America?, recently published by Simon & Schuster, and based on the series of roundtable discussions of America, sponsored by the Advertising Council. Alexander Scurvy was featured as the narrator. Inheritance was produced by Wade Arnold and directed by Ed King. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking.
Enjoy fine variety entertainment on The Dennis Day Show on NBC.